Network, please go to republicbroadcasting.org. Smash the donate, send the fundage. You can mail your check or money order payable to RBN 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664. Call in the debit or credit card number to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. This is your Tuesday night broadcast. The Dynamic Duo reporting here. Dr. Patrick Slattery, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. And yourself?
Doing great. Doing better than I should be. A little overworked, but other than that, doing just fine. Glad to have the work, by the way.
Yeah, and glad to have you.
We were in troubling times. I heard you and Filbert earlier today covering the Restrict Act.
Yeah, and we didn't even get to discuss World War III.
Well, I mean, that's always on the table. It's always open for discussion. We've been in World War III, I think, since the Russia-Ukraine thing last year. I think we've been in World War III. So let's get to these leaked documents. So my take is that it was leaked on purpose, for the purpose of furthering and justifying the Restrict Act, one of many purposes. Also, I mean, the American populace is soured on support for Ukraine. And I think that the Jewish-dominated elite wants to focus on Taiwan next and maybe veer off of Ukraine. So that, you know, why else would the news media cover these leaks? I mean, they're publishing all of them. Certainly the news media, which operates seemingly under control of this Jewish-dominated entity, surely they can be silenced. They've done it in the past. They've just quit talking about things that they don't want the public to know about. What is your take on that, that these were intentionally leaked?
Well, honestly, I've been so busy with taxes. Tax season's very busy for me. And so I haven't been able to go into it very deeply. I have had discussions with Dr. Duke, and he feels that this young Air National Guardman, the 21-year-old guy, whatever his name is, from New England, that he's a hero, that he did leak these documents, and he's saying, wow, look at the New York Times, because 54 years ago when Daniel Ellsberg leaked the Pentagon Papers, the New York Times, not only did they publish the Pentagon Papers, but they went to the Supreme Court to defend Daniel Ellsberg. And yet this guy leaks these papers, this documents, and rather than defend him, they doxed him. They tracked him down, found out who he was, and then turned him over to the feds. That's Dr. Duke's take. Now, so that you get the thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis, it could well be that this was an authentic leak, but because it would be advantageous. It could be advantageous to the Jewish power structure that they've gone ahead and they're taking advantage of it. And they are publishing at least parts of it, the parts that are useful to them. And honestly, I haven't been reading, I haven't been keeping up with exactly what's in this. I mean, I hear that there's stuff about Ukraine, which just confirms everything I already knew, that the Ukrainians aren't winning so hard. They're not winning really, really hard. And that there's a lot of doubts about the corruption and everything. But, you know, it could be that for whatever reason, they've decided that they're going to publish at least parts of this, you know, maybe for the same reasons that lead you to just be suspicious of the whole thing. So I don't know. I don't have a position. But here's one other thing. I do have an open mind to it not being an authentic leak. I'll in general defer to Dr. Duke if he's, because he apparently has really, really looked into this. So I'll defer to him by default. But my open mind is because so much of what I've heard in the leaks is true. And there's two things you have to separate. One is authentic. You have to separate truth from authenticity. And it could be very, very convenient to have a fake, an inauthentic leak of true material, because then you can come back when people start saying, look, these, you know, there's all this corruption. The Ukrainian government is selling arms on the black market. They're not even using them to fight the war. They're just enriching themselves, or something like that. And then they can say, well, that's not an authentic document, without even addressing the truth of the matter. So anyway, that's my response. I have been too busy to look into it that deeply.
Other things that are leaked, you know, you mentioned our fundage going to Ukraine. You know, this Friedman guy that was in the middle of the whole cryptocurrency scam, where money was funneled through the Ukraine and then back into the Democratic.
Bankman Fried? Is that who we're talking about?
Friedman. What did I say? Friedman?
he said Friedman. But is that what we're talking about? Bankman Fried? What a name, I mean, dude. What a name.
Yeah, the Bankman Fried Jew, that this young guy that, you know, the cryptocurrency scandal, where money was being funneled to the Ukraine and then back into the Democratic Party, going in to fund elections right in the middle of the midterms. So you got that. And then you have American troops on the ground in Ukraine. That could be advantageous because this administration, this Jewish-dominated elite, wants to foment World War III for some reason. Or they, you know, they're putting that they're really making us think they want that anyway. I don't know if they want a hot war. But as you mentioned from the beginning, the whole Ukraine thing was just to try to overthrow Putin. Well, that didn't happen. It ended up being very detrimental to the U.S. So, I mean, the people are talking. And so I think getting this stuff out, whether the leak was intentional or not, I mean, maybe they allowed the guy to leak it. You know, maybe they fed him this information and he's legitimately leaking it.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a question. You did you have something on that before I hit my question?
No, that's a possibility. Just like 9/11, one of the more plausible theories is that the hijacking was a legitimate hijacking, that it was Muslim people who planned this and carried it out, but there was foreknowledge of this within elements of the certainly Israeli and American intelligence services and whatnot, and they allowed it to happen and perhaps even kind of cleared the way for it. So it could be something along those lines.
Historical precedents there to back that up. I mean, the sinking of the Lusitania before World War I, the sanctioning of the Japanese to provoke Pearl Harbor. Those are two good historical examples of what you're talking about there. So, and with 9/11, yeah, I think you have two aircraft taken down three skyscrapers, and we went to war with two countries that had nothing to do with it. I think that the buildings fell from controlled demolition. I do think the airplanes actually hit the two towers, but of course, Building 7 just fell. But I don't want to get into the weeds on that. What I want to get into is what was the result of 9/11, and that was justification to invade the Middle East and stay there for low these 21 years, 22 years. The Pentagon Papers, so you mentioned that was over 51 years ago. What was the direct result of the Pentagon Papers?
There was a lot of rancor. What was the direct result? It was really bad for Richard Nixon and his presidency. It turned the American public against the war. I think it certainly indirectly led to the ending of the military draft. So I'm trying to remember exactly how it happened. There was a Senator Mike Gravel from Alaska who was the chairman of some like construction subcommittee, some little subcommittee. But he had gotten a hold of the Pentagon Papers. Somebody had brought the Pentagon Papers to him, and he held some hearing. And I don't even think he held it on the Capitol grounds. I think he held it across the river somewhere. But he held some hearing, and it was a legitimate congressional hearing. And he was trying to read the Pentagon Papers into the congressional record so that that would be a way of keeping them public. And he read for like an hour and a half or something, and he'd been up all night and he was starting to cry. One of his aides said, you know, you can just enter them into the records without reading them. And so he said, oh, okay. And he entered without reading them. He wound up being the person who ended the draft. He submitted legislation, was able to get it passed to end the draft. So there was a big impact. And I remember as a kid just hearing Walter Cronkite day after day after day talking about Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist. Daniel Ellsberg was this Jewish guy who had worked at the Pentagon. And why were they talking about his psychiatrist? Well, I think the Nixon administration had sent burglars into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office, I would suppose, to get some sort of information that would reduce his credibility. It wound up just being a giant scandal. And I didn't do any kind of research into it to refresh my memory, but it was a big deal. And certainly Mike Rivera would remember it very well. And I think he mentioned it from there sometimes. Yeah.
So at the end of a very unpopular war, Vietnam, you had this leak that made the current administration look very bad. Nixon, who was talking about the Jews with Billy Graham, and who was obviously, keen to Jewish power and getting in a lot of trouble by things he was saying, that sort of gave them a way to get out of the war and make Nixon look bad, get rid of him, and move on. So you flash forward to these leaks. I mean, the Brandon administration, the Jewish-dominated establishment are definitely throwing Brandon under the bus. They don't want him in 24. And they know the American populace is not happy with this war. It does not have support anymore for supporting Ukraine, especially with American troops being on the ground over there, which is something that we knew, but now it's confirmed. So similarities. I'm trying to draw similarities there. You see what I'm doing? Could part of this leak be a transition out of the Brandon administration and into the next thing?
Yeah. Will the Brandon element be or entity be thrown under the bus? And, you know, I'm sure there are people who would like to. I was listening to Mike Rivera this afternoon, and he seemed to, like, he's been saying that Hillary Clinton's going to run, and then he seemed to blurt out that there was some sort of news that she's going to run, but I'm not seeing anything like that. So I don't know. The thing is, The only person, the only Democrat who has announced at this point is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who could be a disruptor. The Democrat establishment would never let him win. And the Democrats, they might be stuck with Biden. If the thing is, there's even if Biden is more or less senile, there's people around him who will only be there if Biden's there. There are people who are his people, in particular his wife, who I don't, you know, sometimes presidential wives have a fair amount of input, sometimes they don't. But if he was replaced with, say, Gavin Newsom, who's the person most people are talking about, would Gavin Newsom keep Janet Yellen and Tony Blinken and Alejandro Mayorkas and all these other Jews in the Jews and non-Jews and, you know, other people in the Biden orbit? Or would he just bring in his own Jew crew of different individuals? So it might not represent much of a change as far as we're concerned. But as far as the individuals who right now have jobs that they'd like to have, they might not be in a Gavin Newsom administration. And so it might, if the Brandon is going to run again, if he decides he's going to run again, it might not be that easy to get rid of him without, well, some sort of primary thing. And who knows? Who knows how that would turn out?
And maybe the Jews are ready for a Republican president to, number one, do war with China or a conflict with China, probably in the form of Cold War. And then number two, show the American public that the elections are fair and just. Hey, you got a Republican in, look, don't, you know, forget about that 2020 thing. There's always that. Yeah. And then if that's the case, I mean, are they pivoting to Trump? I mean, it would either be Trump or DeSantis. I don't see anyone else that could accomplish these things. Would Trump go to war with China or do, you know, be in favor of harsh conflict with China? I mean, he certainly had that rhetoric. Now, when he was president and when he ran, he just wanted to be hard on them with trade. But faced with some sort of conflict over Taiwan, I mean, maybe they have enough hooks in Trump where they could actually foment that. Put Trump in. Hey, American public, look, Trump got it. The elections are fair. Forget about that. And look at all these Chinese, because after all, they're setting up banks in America and, you know, trying to infiltrate us.
So the 4 years that Trump was president, there were some times when he did things that the Jewish power structure wanted him to do, that he went along with them. Sometimes that happened. He had been trying to build the wall, and then all of a sudden, was it in his 2019 State of the Union or 2018? I can't remember. One or the other. All of a sudden, he said, I think it was 2019. I think it was after the midterms. He said he wanted more immigrants than ever before. And I don't really know if there was much change in immigration policy after that, but there were times when he did things either because, I don't know, for whatever reason, you know, assassinating General Soleimani, bombing Syria. There's a lot of times when he did things that weren't things that he had run on, where he went along with it. But probably more often.
And I'm alone. Yeah, chill me to the bone.
lot of times when he did things that weren't things that he had run on, that where he went along with it. But probably more often, he was simply just thwarted. He was trying to do things and just losing. So there's the Muslim ban. He tried a Muslim ban. Some lower court blocks it. He tries another Muslim ban. A different lower court blocks that. He was just undermined. So it's a combination of him. And the thing is, so when he took out Soleimani, for instance, well, I shouldn't say took out, when he assassinated Soleimani, for instance, that was a decision he made. And, you know, what precisely was the pressure they put on him? You know, likely it had something to do with the impending impeachment trial that was going to be in the Senate. But, you know, do they have things on him, this and that? Is he compromised? I doubt he's really compromised. There's so much that, you know, he's been arrested. His taxes are out there, everything. I doubt that he's really compromised. But I think he doesn't necessarily know how to fight. And he doesn't know how to put together an effective team, but he might come back in. I don't think he's the first choice of very many Jews in the power structure. I don't think he's the first choice. I think in general they'd like to keep him out. But if he comes in, I'm sure they have contingency plans to try to contain him or try to manipulate him. And I think he's a wild card. He could come in. And he could be absolutely awful and start World War III, or he could come in and direct all of his hostility towards the domestic enemies, which he has pretty often been talking about in recent months.
Well, he's demonstrated that he will cave to pressure, though. You know, he launched missiles at Syria because Ivanka wanted a pony in 2018. Well, now it's 2017. That was when he was barely a couple of months in.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, he assassinated Soleimani. I mean, this is stuff that you wouldn't think he would have done. It was definitely against his talking points. But yet, there, you know, he was pressured into doing that. And now, with headlines like, I got this ABC 11 news, Department of Justice accuses China of using police stations to spy on dissidents inside the U.S., so you've got stuff like that if he gets in, they could pressure him to be hostile towards China over Taiwan. They could pressure him into cracking down, you know, allowing the DOJ to crack down on the American public because of this, you know, 21-year-old Jack, and I'll call his name in a minute, but the one that leaked the documents, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to do this whole thing of this guy was a traitor to America. They're going to do that whole thing. That he was a traitor to America, and it sounds like something that Trump could cave to. Hey, look at Jack Teixeira, you know, a traitor to America, leaked the documents, and he could definitely be pressured into going along with cracking down on white patriots in America that speak out against the government and that speak out against a conflict with China and that did not support the Ukraine. Definitely he could be pressured into all that, and they would get all of that. Plus they could placate the right by putting Trump in and saying, look, the elections are fair. You got your guy back in. That's kind of where I was going with the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing is, I look at Trump as, and I think the Jewish power structure would look at Trump as somebody who is a massive pain in the rear end for them, but they managed to thwart him. They managed to thwart the agenda he was elected on for the most part. But there's a lot of rancor and a lot of bad feelings. There's a lot of negative repercussions that are a result of the unprecedented measures they took in order to thwart the agenda he was elected on. I don't think they would trust him at all. Even if they were able to get their way with him for the most part during his first term, I don't think they want him at all. You know, there may be a few, but I don't think they want him at all. Somebody like Nikki Haley or DeSantis or some other person, they'd probably just be fine with for all the reasons that you were talking about. But Trump, I think at the end of the day, Trump is a narcissist and he's extremely self-centered. And as such, is a wild card. He can be defeated. He can be corralled. But I really don't think he can just be counted on. I don't think he can be depended on. He might. I mean, it's conceivable he could get bought off or whatever. But I don't think anybody can. I don't think anybody could trust him. I mean, I don't trust him.
Especially.
If
he goes into this presidency with this Southern District of New York charges of, you know, election. Campaign funds mismanagement, I guess that's what they're calling it. If he goes in with that, hey, you be a good boy and, you know, we'll stave off these charges. There's that aspect. There's no one taking your place since you've been gone.
Memory, your landline is burning holes. Recover the damage, bring it all home. Follow the breeze, just like a summer song. And stay there forever. I try to remember. Come home.
campaign funds mismanagement, I guess that's what they're calling it. If he goes in with that, hey, you be a good boy and, you know, we'll stave off these charges. There's that aspect.
Well, I think not those charges in particular, because I think those charges are just too ridiculous. I don't think he's going to just I think he would fight those charges because they're very, very fightable. But there could, you know, there could be other types of charges that would be brought up in other courts or whatever. It's and there probably will be. I don't know. I think Trump is extremely unreliable and untrustworthy. And as such, they don't want him for the very same reasons that, you know, we complain about him. I think they would have the exact same complaints. And okay. Mercurial, I think other people, the Biden has been extremely trustworthy for them. He's been very, very reliable. He's just not particularly competent, and his administration's not competent. Andrew Anglin was, frankly, sounded like me when he was saying that these people just, they don't know what the hell they're doing. Yeah. We're run by, and I really do think so. I think these people are not really that super smart. And maybe they've never been super smart, but maybe things weren't so difficult. Maybe it wasn't such a difficult row to hoe before, and now it is. And, you know, we've got very mediocre people doing this, plus all these affirmative action people.
Of course, you had the Brandon going in with the laptop, you know, hanging over him. And I think there's multiple reasons why the FBI sat on that laptop, because the real crux of the laptop is not Hunter Biden smoking crack with hookers or even an underage girl. That's not the crux of it. The crux of it was all the dirty deals with the energy companies in Ukraine. That was all on that laptop that the media did not focus on. And I think the FBI sat on that, number one, to let him win. But number two, they would have that hanging over his head should he ever step out of line. So similarly, what I'm saying is that they could have things on Trump that they could hang over his head and put him in, placate the Trump base, show that the elections are fair, so we can get over that, and just push forward with this conflict with China over Taiwan. But if not Trump, then who? If they were going to go Republican, who would be the perfect Republican? I can't think of anyone else other than Trump to accomplish all of those goals that I just laid out.
Yeah, I don't think – I think Trump is too much of a wild card that I don't think he would – I think he could become president again. I don't think I just don't see it as being part of some sort of sinister 3D, 4D chess or anything like that. If he becomes president again, I think we're going to have four more years of chaos. And very likely he won't have learned a whole lot. And very likely he's not going to bring in people who are committed to his – the agenda that he runs on, and it'll probably be just as much of a chaotic fecal show as it was the first 4 years.
But whoever they bring in, they're going to be pushing crackdowns on white Americans who question the government, and they're going to be pushing conflict with China over Taiwan. Whoever they put in, Democrat or Republican, I don't think it matters.
By the way, so I look at when, especially this past week when Daily Stormer was only on the dark web and I was too lazy to go to my desktop and pull up the Tor browser, I was looking at some other sites, in order to get my fix, like, you know, when I'm sitting down eating my breakfast or whatever, and I want to look at things. I couldn't pull up the Daily Stormer on my phone. So there's a couple sites I looked at. One was, Gateway Pundit, which is just some boomer magatard site and run by a gay guy. And then the other is Russia Today. And Russia Today is all right. And they're not anti-China, but they tend to have to, at the end of their articles, they tend to have these boilerplate paragraphs. And so if they're ever writing about China and Taiwan, boilerplate paragraph about Taiwan says Taiwan is claimed by China, but has been self-governed since 1949, which is completely untrue. And I don't think they're meaning to be untruthful about it. But the idea that Taiwan was self-governed in 1949, in the 40s or the 50s or the 60s or the 70s or the 80s, it absolutely was not self-governed. What does self-governed mean? It means the people of that that jurisdiction of that territory are governing themselves. And what you had until the early 90s was a government of people from China, from mainland China, with only minimal, very minimal input from the people who have been living in Taiwan, right? It wasn't self-governed. It wasn't governed by Beijing, but it wasn't governed by people from Taiwan either. It was governed by people from mainland China. And the National Assembly of in Taiwan, the members of the National Assembly had all been elected on the mainland and fled. And then because they couldn't have elections for their jurisdictions, because their districts were on the mainland, they were just frozen in office, and they continued to be the National Assembly, and the president Chiang Kai-shek, and then the next president, his successor Chiang Ching-kuo, his son, they were from the mainland. It was in no way self-governed, and so these people just, they don't know what they're talking about. It wasn't self-governed. It is self-governed now. But it wasn't for those 40 years. And that's just one thing. What was the thing that got up my nose from the Gateway pundit? I don't know. They said something that was just stupid. I'll remember later on. I just had to get that off my chest.
So after World War II, with the rise of Mao, is it correct to say that, Chinese nationals fled to Taiwan? And Taiwan sort of, would you consider Taiwan like an economic vassal state of the U.S. between 49 and the early to mid 90s? I mean, they made a lot of our stuff.
Yeah. So Taiwan before 1945 had been for 50 years a colony or province of Japan. It was part of the Japanese Empire. And it wasn't super developed, actually. It was more agricultural. It was affluent enough. It was more or less Japanese economic standards, but it was just growing rice. It wasn't all that industrial. Then for 4 years, it was it was reincorporated into the Republic of China, which was governed from Nanjing on the mainland. And then when the nationalists lost the war on the mainland, they fled to Taiwan. And the nationalists had moved their capital around from time to time because they were at war with the communists. They were at war with the Japanese. There was warlords. So they were moving their capital around. So they moved their capital to Taiwan to Taipei with the hope of going back, reinvading the mainland. That was always their explicit goal, was to reinvade the mainland. And when I was there in 1980s, it was under martial law. It wasn't self-governed. It was under martial law until 1987. So, I mean, even well-meaning people who aren't anti-China, like the reporters at RT, they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
So then at the point where China sort of took over the U.S.'s role, because, Taiwan benefited economically off the U.S., like for that time period between 49 and the 90s, mm-hmm. right? And then China became powerful, because basically we, shifted a lot of our production to China. The government did in the 90s. And then Taiwan became, it benefited economically from China. So now is that the thing, now that China is not going to capitulate and become part of the global homo? I don't know a better way to say it. Now that's why there's fight over Taiwan, right? The U.S. wants Taiwan back. I mean, Taiwan does make a lot of the computer chips that the U.S. uses. And so mm-hmm. yeah.
People always say that the United States shifted its manufacturing to China. It didn't really happen like that. What was, now you said that you described Taiwan as kind of a vassal state, and that's more or less correct. There was not an explicit, but kind of an implicit guarantee that Chiang Kai-shek had received. Chiang Kai-shek, he lived until, 1970-something, 72, 73, something like that. And then then after he died, there was a couple, his son became prime minister. There's somebody else who was president for a few years, and his son took over the role of presidency. So there was kind of an implicit guarantee that the United States up until what would it have been up until 1979, 78 or 79, recognized Taipei as the capital of China. It was Jimmy Carter that switched the embassy. The United Nations recognized Taipei as the capital of China until I think 71, and Chiang Kai-shek's government in Taiwan was recognized by the United Nations as the government of China, and they had the permanent seat on the Security Council. And then there was this kind of the United States shift towards Taiwan started or towards Beijing started in the Nixon administration. He had his opening to China, but it wasn't completed until the Carter administration. So you had the United States was recognizing Taipei as the capital of China and was recognizing Chiang Kai-shek and then later Chiang Ching-kuo as the president of China, not the president of Taiwan. And there was a fair amount of American investment in Taiwan. And you had, I think in the 1980s, big shift of like General Electric was for a long time the biggest company in America. Yeah, I think it was the biggest company on the New York Stock Exchange. And General Electric had moved so much of its manufacturing to Taiwan. What happened is so Taiwan became fully industrialized by the 1980s. It was fully industrialized. And then Taiwan started moving its industry into China. It started investing in China. So it really was, and the United States was a latecomer to this. It started off, the investment in China, the big industrialization of China, the foreign-sponsored industrialization of China started with Taiwan. And then it was South Korea and Japan. Hong Kong was involved all along in terms of investment and trade. Chinese in Southeast Asia. And the United States was a latecomer to this. By the time the United States... I guess it was the Clinton administration that recognized that gave most favored nation status to China. But by that time, China was already having super high economic growth, and it was having super high economic growth first and foremost because of investment from Taiwan, but then also in investment from Koreans, Japanese, and ethnic Chinese around Asia. That's
okay.
You know, everybody always wants to think it was Americans that did it or the Jews that did it. It wasn't. It was Orientals.
Right. So that kind of clears up what I was trying to wrap my mind around, this whole conflict with China, because it's very hard to wrap your mind around, by the way, for a blue collar stiff like me. No, so it's not like the U.S. just gave China. So it's like Taiwan made the first move. And this was much after what 1972 was the One China policy. Right. So they had, the U.S. and, acknowledged that Taiwan was part of China. But that was before the industrialization of Taiwan and before Taiwan shifted to China, making China powerful and great.
Well, I mean, so Taiwan was industrializing once Chiang Kai-shek took it over. Once he moved his government to Taipei in 1949, by the way, which was very, very bloody. And there was a very bloody crackdown in Taiwan, and the Taiwanese had only been recently, like only 4 years earlier, had been reincorporated into the Republic of China, because like I said, they had been for 50 years a Japanese colony, and there was a very bloody crackdown. Like I think tens of thousands of people were killed. It was a big deal, but it was industrialized over the 50s, 60s, 70s, and by the 80s it was hardcore in industry, very, very industrial.
But I'm just trying to figure out why the renege on the One China policy. That's what seems to be happening now. The U.S. is reneging on that, right? And that's in light of, Taiwan and China being so economically prosperous together.
Yeah. So the United States always had a One China policy, but the One China that was recognized in the from 1949. Into the 1970s, the China was the Republic of China with its capital in Taipei.
Right.
And then they switched recognition to Beijing. Carter switched recognition to Beijing. And so it was still a one China policy. But there was always the implicit understanding that, well, we're only recognizing one China, but there are two rival claimants to being the legitimate government of China. And when the switch was made to recognizing Beijing, there was some legislation passed. I think it was called the Taiwan Relations Act or something like that, which said, well, we won't recognize Taiwan as a separate country, but we are going to continue and we're not going to recognize the government in Taipei as the government of China, but we're going to continue to sell weapons to them.
All right. So, I mean, would that be a fair statement to say that the U.S. has reneged on the one China policy in light of Taiwan and China becoming so powerful economically?
Not officially, but de facto over these past year or two. Yeah.
Because they're like, oh crap, what happened? What did we do? What did we let happen here? Let's try to back this up. Is the U.S.'s maybe stance on it?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, there is an independence movement in Taiwan. The thing is, like, the people who lived in Taiwan in 1948, they spoke a Chinese language, but it wasn't the main Mandarin language. It was a language that sometimes called Taiwanese, but it's the same language spoken across the straits in Fujian province. So you could call it Fujianese. And it would be like, at least as different as Spanish and Portuguese or Spanish and Italian. They use basically the same characters and the same writing system. But the thing is, the government was from the mainland, and they were speakers of either Mandarin. I mean, that was the official language they were using was Mandarin Chinese, which is, you know, more northern China, like around Beijing, going as far down as Shanghai, more or less. But Chiang Kai-shek himself was actually a native Cantonese speaker. These are languages that are as different basically as French and Spanish and Italian and Portuguese.
Sometimes when your hopes have all been shattered, there's nowhere to turn. You wonder how you keep going. Think of all the things that really matter and the chances you earn.
going as far down as Shanghai, more or less. But Chiang Kai-shek himself was actually a native Cantonese speaker. These are languages that are as different basically as French and Spanish and Italian and Portuguese, but they're written the same way. So the thing is, when I went to Taiwan, when I traveled, I'd like to go to movies, and you go to a movie, and the movies had, they were in Chinese, but they also had Chinese subtitles. That sounds weird, doesn't it? But the thing is, if the movie was in Mandarin Chinese, the people whose ancestors had been in Taiwan might not understand it. So it was subtitled, like all the Chinese can read pretty much the same Chinese characters. So it's funny, you'll go see Chinese movies and there are subtitles in Chinese. So the people from the mainland and the people who had already been in Taiwan didn't even speak the same language, although they could read it, but they couldn't they speak the same language.
It sounds like the similarities in French and Spanish, both Latin languages.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Kind of, there's some similar words like muy bien. It's very good. In French as well as Spanish.
Yeah. So they're similar, but not necessarily mutually intelligible. Mm-hmm. And the only one I've studied is Mandarin, so I can't give you a whole lot of examples. But I do know from having been to Hong Kong that if you're walking around in Hong Kong and you're seeing the street names, which are transliterated into English, you'll see Chinese words ending in K or in T, and you would never see a Mandarin word end in K or T. They don't. They never do. So, you know, and Mandarin Chinese has four tones. I think Cantonese has nine tones. They're different languages, although there are similarities, but you just can't necessarily understand them.
And further trying to wrap my mind around the Taiwan debacle, I'm going to compare it to Ukraine. So, you know, Ukraine, after the dismemberment of the Soviet Union, Ukraine was independent, but it held good ties with Russia. Russia became very powerful in natural gas economically and under Putin. And so the U.S. figured out that, hey, all the gas is flowing through Ukraine. Let's take Ukraine and get a chokehold on that gas going into Europe. I'm comparing, right? Just to give you overall, I'm trying to compare the Taiwan Chinese U.S. thing with the U.S. Ukraine Russia thing.
Yeah. So the similarity is that in Ukraine there were a lot of a big hunk of people who really identified themselves as Russia and wanted good relations with Russians, and there was a lot of people who saw themselves as being distinct from Russians, being distinct as Ukrainians, and wanting to have good relations with Europe and the US and bad relations with Russia. And so the same way in Taiwan, there are people who see themselves as Chinese and want to have good relations with Chinese. And there's other people who, while they may see themselves as Chinese, they see themselves as different enough and unique enough that now not necessarily for ethnic or cultural reasons, maybe more for political reasons, but people who don't want to be part of China and are trying to forge some sort of new national identity, and they're in the American orbit. But you know, we're up at time for this show.
Thanks, Patrick. We'll continue it on Patrick and Jeremy on National Bugle, 1 p.m. Central Wednesday. Be there or be a big flaming transvestite. Stay under the mask. Stay under.